So go ahead and want to tell me about the... Oh, let me just start 1 second. Today is August 4th, 1994. This is Sojin Kim. I'm here with Pete Rodriguez in his home in East L.A. And Pete, you were going to start by telling me about this photograph you have here.
Yeah, well, I was born in Sonora, Mexico. I was born in Cananea. It's a mining town in copper mining town in the mountains of Sonora. And I was born in 1919. And we came to Los Angeles in 1923. And I didn't know this, but I guess we were political refugees because my father was very much involved in the revolution, 1910 revolution of Mexico. And he was exiled from Mexico to the United States. I didn't know that at 4 years old, you know. But we came in through Douglas, Arizona. And my mother used to be a good seamstress, and so she sewed us these stupid little Navy clothes. And I was bugged about it, but you probably could tell by my face. But she was a good seamstress, and so she made those outfits, sailor outfits for us.
Where is this picture taken?
In Douglas, Arizona. When we crossed the border from Agua Prieta, Sonora, Mexico, into the United States through Douglas, Arizona.
That's a great picture.
1923.
And you're which one are you?
I'm the smallest one.
The smallest.
My oldest brother, Eddie, he's up there. He's the pioneer in bilingual broadcasting in Los Angeles.
Okay.
He passed away, but... I'm the only one left around here. Yeah.
Why don't we back up then and talk more about your family. You were born in Mexico.
I was born. We were all born in Sonora.
Uh huh.
Sonora, Mexico.
And who were you? Do you want to get the phone?
No.
Okay. And who were your parents?
My parents was my father was Pedro. That's whom I'm named after. Pedro Rodriguez, and my mother was Teresa Acosta. My father was a Yaqui Indian, and my mother was a Mayo Indian from Sonora. Not a Mayo, Mayo. M-A-Y-O. And those are my parents.
Do you have... And what did they do when they were in Mexico?
Well, my father was in mining. We were almost... My family was... as I understand it, we're all miners. And a few farmers here and there, but mostly for mining. And... then my father got involved very much in the revolution with the Obregón people who became president of Mexico yesterday, and De La Huerta. They both became presidents of Mexico. My father was involved with them.
Do you know what he was doing with them?
Well, he was actually a labor organizer in Mexico because the United States and a lot of foreign investments were in Sonora because of the rich copper and gold and farming. I'm sure you've heard of the Guggenheims and the I forget their names, the Chandlers, and all these big United States rich landowners owned most of the land and all of the business in Mexico. In Sonora, at least, you know, mm-hmm. the border states. And so they were farmers, too, farmers and miners.
Okay, and then you came to the United States what year again?
In 1923.
In 1923, and the circumstances were political.
Well, I didn't know that, but doing some of the research on the background of my family, yes. And we were, my father was exiled, as I told you, on account of the revolution and his part in it. And we came to join him in Los Angeles in 1923.
1923. And what neighborhood did you come to in Los Angeles?
What?
What neighborhood did you come to first when you moved here?
Oh, we moved into the old Sonora town, which is around Macy and the Olvera Street. And Los Angeles was a small little... Well, it wasn't small, but to me it was a huge... But... in relationship to the way it is now, it used to be a very small city. And there was a lot of Chinese around Chinatown, and La Placita, what they call La Plaza. That was a concentration. They call it Sonora Town because there are a lot of people from Sonora that came to California and to Los Angeles specifically. Mm-hmm. So that's why I call it Sonora Town. And we lived there in the temple area, you know. Mm-hmm. We lived on Macy and Ord around there, I think. And then when the Mexican workers started migrating to east of the river, and to Belvedere and Boyle Heights and all of this, we came with that tide too. And I lived in the flats, you know. It was called the Russian flats in those days.
Which area is that?
They call it Liso Pico now. Mm-hmm. Between the 1st and the 4th Street on Mission, Pecan Street, and all those up to Boyle Avenue. It was called the flats.
Okay. Do you know why your family chose to live in the area they first moved to? Did you have relatives?
Yeah, we had relatives that, as I said, a lot of people were from Sonora were living in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. and were migrating to Los Angeles because of the work, you know, it was a growing city. And yes, we had family in Sonora Town and then in Belvedere and Boyle Heights.
So then what year did your family move east of the river?
Oh, geez, immediately. I don't think we lasted over a year or over in around Macy and Alameda around there. I think it was 1924 when we moved to the flats.
Mm-hmm. What do you recall about when you first came here? Do you remember, do you have any early memories when you first moved to Los Angeles?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, still a lot of vivid things in my mind, you know. Because I was a stone desert kid, you know, and coming to a huge city like this, it was amazing to me. I was just 4 years old, and I remember the big buildings, because we took the, they used to call it the Sur Pacifico, but that used to be the Southern Pacific Railroad from Arizona to Los Angeles. And we crossed all the way through Palm Springs and the valley there, Imperial Valley, and Indio and all that. You know, and I was amazed at all this big, huge, green state. To me, it was fantastic because being from the deserts is just nothing but desert, you know, desert and mountains and nothing. And to come into this new country where it was green and a lot of work and, you know, amazing. Los Angeles was small. I remember horse-drawn streetcars on Spring Street because we got off on the railroad station there on Alameda, and we were looking for this street Ord and Spring. Because that's where we were going to stay with in a hotel. And looking at these huge buildings to me was amazing, you know. And I remember a lot of Chinese living. And just big. To me it was huge.
And you said that you lived over in Catalina for a while.
Well, yeah, we moved to Catalina in 1925 when my uncles got a job working building Avalon Bay. And I don't know if you know, but it was Avalon Bay in Catalina Island was built by Mexican labor, you know.
No, tell me about it.
Yeah, well, that was for things I. We used to have a lot of oral history. We didn't have much written history, as you probably know, because Mexico was an illiterate country, still is, you know, but in those days it was worse. And so we didn't have television, so all we had was really storytelling, you know, family, oral history. and Catalina was just in the 20s, early 20s, was just being built. And I remember the beautiful ocean, you know, Pacific Ocean, because you don't see oceans in the desert. So to me, it was amazing, you know, the Pacific Ocean. And I had a ball. I remember a lot of Hollywood stars were there, and that amazed me a lot, because the film industry was doing a lot of filming in at the time. I think it was, I forget the name of the movies, but we used to go watch them film, my brother and I, and go fish and see. We saw Oliver Hardy and Stan Laurel and, you know, Hoot Gibson, a lot of the stars. Tom, you probably don't even know these names. Tom Maynard, you know. And we used to just be amazed at all this activity.
And so your father was also working on Avalon Bay?
No, my father returned right away back to Mexico.
Oh, he did, okay.
Yeah, he went back because, as I understand it, he was part of this what they call Partido Liberal Nacional, National Liberal Party. That was a very radical party, because he was an organizer, labor organizer. He got involved with Ricardo Flores Magón. I don't know if you've ever heard of this man, but he was he had a paper called Regeneración, Regeneration. And he opposed the Mexican government before the revolution started, in the early 1900s. And he was living here in Los Angeles at the time. And so my father somehow got involved with him again, you know. And he went back to Mexico. And he was in Baja California with him for a while. So my uncles are the ones that came from Mexico too, later, and joined us. And they got the job working in the shipyards in Wilmington and San Pedro Harbor. And we lived there for a while. Then they got a job in Catalina Island.
And so your mother and your brother and you were with your uncles then?
Yeah.
And what was your mother doing?
My mother used to be a seamstress. She was a great... she worked for Mission Linen Supply Company right there on Mission, First and Mission. That's why we moved over here to the flats on Pecan Street. And we call it Lisa Pico now, but it's used to be the Russian flats and tortilla flats. And, and she used to be working this linen company. In Catalina, she didn't work because my uncles didn't want her to work anymore, so they came and took us all to Catalina, and that's where I started school.
Okay.
I started the first grade in Catalina Island.
What's the school called?
It was, you know, I don't even know, but it's Catalina Island Grammar School, I guess. My wife and I went over to research here last year, and the school no longer exists. It's now a Baptist church. But I found out some... I talked to some of the old-timers there. And my uncle was killed in Catalina Island.
What happened?
Well, it's very... He went into a bar where there was no Mexicans allowed, and he got killed, and they just threw him into the ocean. I guess they used to do that quite a bit to our people in those days. You know, I hate to say this, but it's true. And doing a lot of this research, I come across all these things. I didn't know that before when I was a kid. I just remember the funeral. Because that's stuck in my mind, you know. Stuck in my mind. And I used to love my uncle. He was a huge man. He was 6'5½", I think, my mother says. And he was just a big man. And they killed him. And so my other uncle went back to Mexico after that, because he was tired of the violence. And the... I got so prescient here about being not an American, a white blonde American, you know. So he went back to Mexico, and so we came back to the United, well, to the States. Then from there we moved to Orange County.
What was that like then?
Well, it's all farms and orange groves. No freeways, no houses, no Anaheim Hills, and all these, you know, all this concrete. And it was just farms and hills and wild country. Beautiful. I still remember the smell of the orange groves. You know, as far as you can see, it's nothing but orange groves. And a lot of Japanese farms and just farms and vineyards. We lived in a little town called Olive. It's no longer exists. It's part of Orange, City of Orange. But it was they had a big reservoir because they used to irrigate all of Santa Ana Valley from this. From this big reservoir, from the Santa Ana River, come and dump into the in this reservoir, and I became a Mexican Huckleberry Finn.
Tell me about that.
Yeah. And I tell this to people, you know, especially white Anglo Americans. They can't believe that there could be a Mexican Huckleberry Finn, you know, because I didn't like school. I didn't understand what was going on, really, so I used to try and get out of it as much as I could. And I would fish all day long in this reservoir. No fishing allowed, but I became friends with the caretaker. And I was only 9 years old, 9 to 12. We lived there from ages 9 to 12. And I'd fish all day. And with my slingshot, I'd hunt in the hills, and you know, against crows and blackbirds and all that, you know. Just had a ball. I had three wonderful years in Orange County. Yeah, there was no grocery stores in those days. There was, you know, if you wanted eggs, you had to go to the hen house and get the eggs and get them from the chickens. You know, if you wanted milk, you milked the cow. Young kids don't know this. That wasn't too long ago. It's only from 28 to 31 we lived there.
So this must have been when the Depression hit the rest of the U.S.
Depression hit in 1929.
So what was that like where you were living?
Well, when it really hit, we were in living in this little town called Olive. And I don't remember being that harsh. I remember when we came into Los Angeles in 1931, it was still Depression time, and I remember it then. But in Olive, I don't remember. I was having such a ball, I didn't care about it. I didn't know I was poor, you know. I didn't have shoes, so I was barefoot all the time. There's a joke in the family where my soles were so thick from no shoes, you know, walking around and running around in the hills and all that. That one time I stepped on a burning cigar and I didn't even know it. I had natural souls, you know.
What and, kind of memories do you have of school? Because you said you didn't enjoy it, so you.
Well, my brother used to like school. He was a smart one. I turned out to be just. I didn't really. Get into school till we came back into Los Angeles into junior high, they used to call it in those days. But in grammar school, I couldn't understand it, what they were saying too much, because in those days, they didn't want you to speak Spanish, and that's all I spoke, really. I learned English by being with other people, and my brother and my cousins, but in school, I just couldn't understand. And I couldn't understand how some of these people would get mad at me for not understanding, you know. And so I said, heck with you, and I'd take off, you know, and go to school. And you know, they graduated me from Olive. I don't know why, because I didn't really go. I remember just little small things like my mother bought me a big pair of shoes to graduate, you know. And I was really embarrassed with these shoes. And all the girls and everybody and the kids were all teasing and kind of making fun at me on account of these shoes, because I think I was very self-conscious of them. I know I was, you know. So these shoes. And they didn't see me too much in school. They didn't know why I was graduating anyway, I think. When I went to research again, this little town, I met a lady who's my age, 76, who went to school at the same time at Olive Grammar School. She didn't remember me because that was so long ago. You know, it wasn't, I guess, not important. But she remembers Olive Grammar School the same. She had pictures and I looked in there. And of course, I wasn't in there because, I used to fool my mother, you know, my brother, and I used to tell my brother, don't tell my mom or I'll jump you. And he was not like me at all. He was more studious, and I was out in the streets, you know. I was fishing and, like I say, with my dogs. I had two dogs, which were a lot of fun. They would wait for me. I'd walk to school, and I could see them wagging their tails in the dust, and I said, I don't belong here. I'd go out and go with them, and we'd go run around in the hills, you know, fish and hunt.
That sounds great.
Go to the river, Santa Ana River. See, it was wild country in those days. It wasn't like it is now. It was just, it's unbelievable. It's hard to explain, but
right.
I go back because my son lives in Anaheim Hills. And I go back to this little town and go into this haunted house. It used to be a haunted mill. It was an old mill that was put up there by some people that came from Ohio. It's a historic landmark now. Right next to the river and the canal and the reservoir, they had this flour mill. And it was a... That was what made the town and the packing plant. You know, they didn't have any industry except farming, but that was what made the town. As a matter of fact, here, I had a... These are the streets. That's the length of the town, 6 blocks. Can you believe that?
Wow.
By 2. Lincoln Avenue, I don't know if you know this area at all.
Buena Vista and then
Olive. Yeah, yeah.
No.
I went back to research because I used to get confused over the fact that they called it Buena Vista and Ocean View because you could see the ocean
right
from the top. It was up in the hills, you know, it's hilly country. And you could see the Pacific Ocean glistening in the background, and that's why they called it Buena Vista,
good view.
And I used to ask my brother, why do something call it Buena Vista and then they call it Ocean View, you know? He said, we're in another country, you know, you're not in Mexico anymore. All these things were kind of confusing to me at 12 or 10 year old. It's kind of confusing. Yeah.
You talked about, you know, what happened to your uncle when you were in Catalina. What was it like being in school there for you? Were there other kids there who were from Mexico or...
Yeah, oh yeah.
Okay.
Well, we were separated really because they were building the public school down by the golf. I don't know if you've been to Catalina, by the golf course, and my uncles were working in this building the school, and we used to walk down the mountainside there because it's all hills and cliffs, and into this it was a small school, it was just maybe 12, 15 kids. You know, and we were kind of separated from the Anglo-Americans because we didn't speak English too well, and so I guess they thought we were kind of stupid, you know, but so we were, I remember some of the kids, I don't remember too much of Catalina, that's why I had to go back and research.
Mm-hmm.
I remember more about my not going to school to Olive.
Right.
In the second and third and fourth and fifth grade.
So those weren't segregated schools then in Olive?
What's that?
In Olive, it wasn't a segregated school. It was all...
It was all together.
Mm-hmm.
It was all together. But you couldn't speak Spanish. You had to That's in a way it's good because you learn how to speak fast like that. You know, I remember getting wrapped across my hands. You used to have to put your hands out like this, and they hit you with a ruler if you didn't do or didn't understand something. I didn't like that, you know, and they'd sting you. That they won't hurt you, but it's sting the heck out of you, you know. That's embarrassing in front of all the kids, you know. So I says, I don't belong here. I used to take off.
What was your mother doing in Orange then, Orange County?
And
Olive.
She was just my father took us over there. It's part of the story that I'm writing, but. Somehow we ended up in this little town because my father took us there. He used to come back and forth, you know, from his whatever he was doing, and she was just there was nothing really. She was just a housewife at the time.
But was your uncle with you still, or you said your uncle had gone?
No, my uncle got killed, and the other one had gone back to Mexico. So we were just my brother and I, and my mother, and then when my father came, he stayed. About another year with us, and he's gone again. So he wouldn't stay with us too long. So I grew up just the three of us.
So then what year did you come back to Los Angeles?
In 1931.
Okay. And this time you moved east of the river.
We lived in Boyle Heights.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, in City Terrace.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we're just across a couple of hills over here.
And what was the neighborhood like when you came back to it? How did it strike you?
It was primarily a Jewish community. Very affluent. It was a great neighborhood. And we used to live on that side of the street, and we could see all of downtown. Griffith Park and Ascot Speedway. They used to have racing cars on the bottom. Right there where the near where the General Hospital is, they used to have racing. We used to sit up there on the hills and watch them race. Then the red electric cars, you know, going down through here. There were no freeways, you know. And there's some beautiful homes because the affluent people used to build these homes. And there was a section where it was all Mexican. A lot of Japanese, I remember, a lot of blacks, Russians. It was kind of mixed.
So it was pretty mixed. There was no housing segregation at the time?
Well, there was. I don't think there was any forced segregation. You kind of band together, you know. Mexican people band together. Mm-hmm. The blacks would band together. Mm-hmm. Russians would band together. Jews would, live in certain areas.
Was there much interaction between the different groups?
Yeah. I grew up on Soto Street and Brooklyn Avenue there, you know, and with Russians. They used to call me Rodriguezov. Can you believe it? Rodriguez, because I used to hang around with a lot of Russians, you know, when I went to, and Armenians, when I went to Stevenson.
Is that, that's a junior high?
Junior high.
Mm-hmm.
Junior high. And then to Roosevelt, you know, it's called a Jewsvelt. It was so many Jewish people. Great friends, great people. I mean, to me, I was drinking tea and eating bagels when I was 14, 15 years old. On Red Canners and on Rasner's Bakery, you know. We used to go have bagels and cream pies. And
is that Cantor's in Fairfax or Cantor's?
Well, it was just Cantor's was started right here on Brooklyn and Soto, and then the Jewish people went to West LA, the Fairfax area, and left City Terrace. Then the Mexican people started moving into these areas. You know.
Can you remember other places where you used to hang out in the neighborhood during when you were growing up? Any certain places that you would go often?
I'll tell you, we didn't go too far out.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't go too far out. Later on, in the 40s, during the war and during the big band areas, we started going up. But I have a standing joke, and it's just a joke that it took me 19 years to cross Main Street, you know, because we had no business on that side, so we didn't go over there, you know.
Uh-huh.
We just.
But in your own neighborhood, were there places where you would go often that were important sort of to you when you were growing up?
Let's see. We used to go to San Gabriel River over here in San Gabriel, South San Gabriel, and swim.
Is that the tribute? Is that part of the LA River?
No, no.
Oh, okay.
That's the San Gabriel River.
Oh, okay.
It's a little distant. The LA River was pretty big in those days.
I wanted to ask you about that, what the LA River was like then.
Yeah, it was pretty big before they put the concrete flood control. It was pretty big. We used to go there and wade and fool around. And we used to go to Lincoln Heights and go buy some wine with the Italian guys there after playing ball. We were very athletic. We played a lot of softball, baseball. I played football at Roosevelt High School. There was a lot of Japanese and Russians, you know, Jewish guys. We were city champs.
Wow, when you were playing?
1936.
Wow.
City champ. So I was mixed. It was not so much racism. We used to, what we used to call wolf, razz each other, you know.
Uh-huh.
But there wasn't the racism there is now.
Mm-hmm.
It was racism that's violent racism. We used to get along pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
All of us.
So what other activities were you involved in when you were in high school?
Oh, like I told you, playing a lot of baseball.
Mm-hmm.
We formed a club called the Fresno Athletic Club, of which I became president for 4 years. I became a kind of an oligarchy. I kind of ruled the thing for almost 5-6 years, something like that. And then, like I told you, the big band era, I remember the Depression days, going back to that a little
mm-hmm.
bit.
Sure.
And seeing some of the... we didn't know there was so much graft and so much dishonesty in City Hall. We heard about it, but it didn't. We just happened to live on at that time on Orme when I was going to Roosevelt, and I remember hearing a bomb go off all of a sudden, and there was this city worker, a big friend of the mayor at the time. Was it Polson? No, somebody else. It was a lot of graft. We didn't know this was going on.
So what was the bomb about?
Well, they blew this guy's car up right in the garage. It was a block away from our house, you know, and he was involved in some kind of shenanigans in City Hall. It was a gangster days. I haven't that type of... gangsterism was all rampant all throughout the country, especially back east. And it reached here to quite a bit. In East L.A. And it was especially in the Jewish community. Mickey Kanner, I don't know if not Mickey Kanner, the gangster, Kush. He was a big gangster. He somehow got involved in with the Hollywood crowd and booking and all that, and we used to play with him. Can you believe that? At Roosevelt, and he used to box, and we used to joke around with him. We didn't know he was going to become such a big gangster, you know. That's about what else. What all I remember.
What else about sort of this whole gangster era do you remember?
Well, we used to go to the movies a lot, and you know, James Cagney and all these guys. I forget some of their names, but we used to see them, and we used to somehow influence us, you know, because you see these guys come out of nowhere and all of a sudden become rich, and we used to wonder how they would do this. So, and frankly, we learned a little bit about the free enterprise system in the United States, and they used to call them colonias, where the people, Mexican people, used to live, colonies, because they were, you know, we were segregated, and we learned how to band together and control certain corners, shoe shine, selling paper, newspapers, and whatever, because we were influenced by these gangsters, and it was rampant throughout the United States.
Wow. So what movie houses did you go to?
We used to go to one, it's no longer, it's now a church. They used to call it the Crystal on Whittier Boulevard. Whittier and Communis, I think it is. It's been a long time. And then we used to go to a Jewel on Indiana on Whittier. Once in a while we'd go a little further off and go to Ford and Whittier. Used to be a big vaudeville show there, theater where they had vaudeville.
What was that like, that whole period when, with the music and vaudeville and jazz?
It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun because it was a stage and they were fun guys, fun people, you know. The silent movies, I remember the organ playing, you know, and they used to have serials series nowadays on television, and to have these serials of the revolution, revolutionary days, the United States Revolution days, the French and the English and the Indians, and we used to go almost every Sunday to go see these things. You know. But with 10 cents, I remember my mother used to give us 15 cents a piece. We used to go to the show and have candy and still have some sodas and have some left over. Can you believe that? Nickel shows. It was weird.
What are other things you did for leisure or when you weren't at work or school activities when you were growing up?
Nothing too much. We used to just, as I say, play, hang around a lot at playgrounds. Evergreen Playground and Fresno Playground.
Where's Fresno Playground?
It's on Fresno Street near Olympic.
Oh, okay.
It's quite famous. So is Evergreen Playground, as you know.
Can you tell me about those two places?
Oh, God, let's see. My mother didn't like it because I used to sometimes shine shoes across the street to make a little extra money. And I got hung up with a not too good of a crowd sometimes. She used to bomb me up for that. They were nice guys. It was just a club. It was, they called themselves the Evergreen Knights, but they had a bad reputation, and she didn't like me to be hanging around with. They were good athletes. We played a lot of football and baseball and basketball and playground style, you know. With a lot of blacks, there was a black colony right there on Evergreen and First between Brooklyn and Third. There was a lot of black colony and that jet. You know, I also learned how to do what do they call it, Japanese with the bamboos. I forgot the name of it. Now that you brought that up,
describe it.
I used to. There's a church there right on Evergreen and Second, and I used to have a real good friend, Cedric. I forget his last name, and I remember Jack Cucci because I played football with him later on, and he, big guy, Jake. We used to call him Jake, and they used to go and practice this kendo or whatever it was with bamboos in this church and put these masks on, you know. And I learned a little bit of that too. You see, I used to hang around with Japanese, with Russians, with blacks, and Mexicans. So you get a pretty good education.
Definitely.
I used to go to Jake's house and eat. And then I had another friend, Mike Yonai. I used to go there because he had a lot of turtles and had beautiful gardens in the back, you know. And I used to be amazed at some of their houses, how and the difference in the way they lived and the way we lived, you know.
What? So how is it different? Huh? How is it different?
Oh, it's different. Mexican colonias, I was more comfortable in that atmosphere because it was just nothing but Mexicans. And you see, what do you call these? Nopales, cactuses.
Mm-hmm.
You see cactuses hanging, and you see alleys, and you see unpaved streets, and little shacks here and there, and it's a Mexican barrio. Then up on the top on Norena Street, and 4th, 5th, 6th, and there you see Japanese homes real clean and neat, with neat gardens and others. And it was different. And then the Russians, with their, on Sunday, they dress up with all these. We used to wonder why they went to church like that, you know.
How did they dress up?
In their white and long, brocaded kind of stuff, you know, long dresses. And it was just, why do these people dress like that? You know, we couldn't understand why the Russians, but they were our friends, so the sons of these people. And because there was a Russian church right on Arena and 6th, an Orthodox, real Orthodox. And we used to live on the bottom, and we used to call the gully down there. That's, you know where 4th Street is?
Mm-hmm.
The bridge and
right.
Whittier over there?
Mm-hmm.
There's a ravine down there. We used to call it a gully. It used to be a kind of a little river going through there, a little creek. And it was just like a Mexican town. And we used to have rock fights with these Russian guys, you know. We had friendly rock fights, but they could get a little serious sometimes. Because we'd be down here and we'd be up there, and then they'd see us and we'd throw rocks at them just to, our kids, you know. Yeah. And they'd throw them back, and we'd have all these terrible rock fights on Sundays, you know. When they're going to church. The Japanese guys were very, very quiet. They didn't get in too much. They just say, you guys are crazy, you know, and leave us alone. But they were good athletes. I'm telling you, we won a city championship at Roosevelt High School. And there was 7 Japanese on the team.
Wow. And what position were you playing?
End, I used to play end.
Uh-huh. Did you know how to play football when you first went?
What's that?
How did you learn to play football? Did you learn on the playground?
In the streets.
Yeah.
In the playground.
Mm-hmm.
Street. And when I went to Roosevelt, it was kind of weird, because I was too small to play varsity, so I had to play B. And then I would work to help my mother out with the paper route or whatever. Shining shoes, like I tell you. And sometimes I would not miss. So I didn't really play until my last year at Roosevelt High School. When I said, that's what I want to do. I want to play football with these guys, you know. Because we were so... can you believe we went unbeaten, unscored. Nobody even scored on us all season.
Wow.
So it was just a bunch of guys that we grew up together, you know. Kimball, George Fuccino, I remember that. Great guys, yeah.
What was your mother doing now when you were in this area?
She was working in the garment industry,
mm-hmm.
as a seamstress.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember anything about that?
Sweatshops. And she joined the union, I remember. I don't remember much of it because I was too busy with my stupid life, you know, my teenage life, you know. Yeah. I do remember going a couple of times with her to some of these places uptown, but I felt uncomfortable downtown for some reason.
It's across Main Street.
Yeah, across Main Street. Too big. Too strange for me. I would rather be in my environment.
Right. What were the places like? Do you remember what the rooms looked like when you went with her? What the buildings were like?
Long, big rooms with hundreds of sewing machines and just the horror of this. Because they were slave shops. They were really... These people that run these shops were very... very mean. My mother used to tell us about them. She used to come tired for a thing. And I remember that she would work all day long in these shops, and then she'd come at night, give us, make a dinner for us, and then go, come over here in City Terrace and Boyle Heights with the ricos. We used to call them the ricos, the rich people, and wash for them, and iron for them, you know. And on weekends, she would sometimes clean their homes, and I would go with her sometimes and help her from getting away most of the time. She was a hard worker, my mom. She had to. She was by herself, and it was depression time in the 30s, and she had to work two, three jobs to do.